Each year, an estimated 700 women die during childbirth and 50,000 are severely injured. This makes the United States the deadliest place in the developed world to give birth. And according to an investigation by USA Today, the vast majority of those injuries and deaths are preventable. The investigation found that hospitals across the country are systematically failing to keep mothers safe, despite a huge body of evidence that outlines best practices and life-saving procedures. Allison Young was the lead reporter behind the investigation. Her story for USA Today is called Deadly Deliveries. Hospitals know how to protect mothers. They just aren't doing it. Allison, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So let's dig right in. Allison, you know, as part of this investigation, your team examined the cases of 150 different women, contacted 75 hospitals, and examined a pile of documents. You say in the story more than 500,000 pages of what you called internal hospital records. What were those records and how did you come across them?
So one of the things that is incredibly difficult is to find out what is the safety record for women giving birth at hospitals across the country. So we have pulled out records that we've been able to obtain through lawsuits that have been filed, but also one of the areas where we were able to get some really good insights into things that normally the public doesn't see is there was a quality improvement project that was funded by the federal government, and it was to have hospitals try to improve their care in a whole host of areas. Two of the areas happened to be involving childbirth, and where we were able to dig in on those records, we found that many hospitals were not giving the kinds of emergency treatments that women are supposed to get.
I see. And what was the scope of the hospitals? In what states were the hospitals located?
So the hospitals where we were able to get some of these records, some of them were in New York State. We unfortunately were not able to get the names of the hospitals in New York State. We also were able to get some records relating to those in Pennsylvania and also down in the Carolinas.
I see. And were the names kept confidential across the country or just in New York?
They were kept confidential in these reports. We were fortunate in the sense that in the Carolinas, because of how they filed their reports and used some ID numbers that were actually, we could line those up with some names, we were able to basically unmask the names of the Carolinas hospitals. The New York officials, when they filed their reports, they did a better job of anonymizing who the hospitals were that they were working with.
I see. I see. How many reporters took part in this investigation, and how long did it take?
So we have been working on what actually is still an investigation that's continuing for a number of years now. It's myself and two other colleagues in particular, as well as a bunch of editors and other sort of support staff who are helping us tell the story visually. This is an issue that is very difficult to dig into because it's hard to get information about what happens. One of the things that we found is that we're talking about 50,000 women a year who suffer very, very serious injuries in childbirth. But one of the things that we found in talking to these women is that they often believe that if they didn't die, it's because they were saved and they got good care. And to be sure, in many cases, that's the case. But the experts say that about 50% of the women who die could have been saved with better care, and that also for those women who suffer these very serious injuries, their injuries could have been prevented or reduced in about half the cases with better care. And so part of the issue here is overcoming the barrier that many women don't necessarily know that the care they received wasn't the kinds of gold standard care that's been recommended for a long time.
Interesting. So talk about what's causing some of these injuries. What are the leading causes of injuries and maternal death?
So two of the leading causes of women dying from childbirth-related issues or suffering very serious injuries are hemorrhage and dangerous blood pressure conditions such as preeclampsia. So both of these are areas where experts have found that better medical care could dramatically reduce the number of women who are being harmed or dying. And the way this plays out, a good example is with hemorrhage. So Experts have found that health professionals often fail to recognize when a normal amount of bleeding from childbirth crosses the line and becomes a potentially dangerous hemorrhage. At many hospitals across the country, nurses and doctors simply look at the amount of blood that they see in front of them, and they take an educated guess at how much has been lost. They call this visual estimates. But over the years, studies have warned that these visual estimates often underestimate how much blood has been lost. And the reason that's important is it delays giving the woman the kinds of effective treatments to stop the bleeding and replace the blood she's losing. And you have the potential for things to spiral out of control and ultimately very serious and invasive treatments, such as having to give the woman a hysterectomy, have to be given if it's not tackled early enough. And there is a push to get hospitals to measure how much blood has been lost, literally weighing blood-soaked items or measuring in calibrated containers. So there are some things in that can be done. Same thing with high blood pressure. There are protocols that say that women whose blood pressures cross a certain danger level, that when you're pregnant or you've recently given birth put you at high risk of stroke, you're supposed to get very specific medication within 1 hour. But a lot of hospitals aren't doing that consistently.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm talking to Allison Young, investigative reporter for USA Today and author of Deadly Deliveries. Hospitals know how to protect mothers. They just aren't doing it. So, Allison, you have this really compelling graphic within your story that shows the U.S. rate of maternal deaths shooting up, while in countries like Germany, France, and Japan, it's shooting down. So are these countries doing the sorts of things that you were just explaining when it comes to hemorrhaging and high blood pressure?
It is a very dramatic graphic, and it's the kind of thing that people in this country have a hard time believing, because we really like to think that we have the best healthcare system in the world. A great example is in England. In the United Kingdom, they have done a much better job going back many decades, really examining every woman who dies because of a childbirth-related issue. Her death is examined in great detail, and lessons learned are then put forth to the medical community to try to learn from what has happened and change medical practice. And the experts say that part of the reason that women die at a far lower rate in that country and in others, that they're doing a much better job examining and learning lessons from when women die, and then also really having healthcare systems that adopt the best practices. What we found in our interviews for this project is, in the United States, we have a culture in medicine that really bristles at the idea of standardizing medical care. But standardization is what a lot of these experts are saying is needed to ensure that women are consistently receiving the best treatments and not suffering needless deaths and injuries.
So, Allison, we'd like to take some calls from listeners. So, listeners, if you experienced complications with childbirth, or if you had a great experience and learned something along the way, call us and tell us your story. Or if you're a doctor, nurse, or doula and have something to say, please give us a call at 212-433-9692. Again, that number is 212-433-9692. Now, Allison, as part of this series, your team produced some excellent videos where you have women telling their stories in their own words, and we wanted to play one clip. This is some audio from a woman named Antoinette Pratsinakis, and Antoinette suffered a stroke after giving birth, and let's play a little bit of her story.
The day I have Lucy, I remember I was very excited, but just very scared of a new mom. I just started feeling nauseous and bad headache, and it's not feeling good at all.
And it was essentially, check your blood pressure over the weekend, and if it's over 150, come in on Monday. My wife reconfirmed, my blood pressure is over 150 right now. And they reiterated the same instructions. We just didn't know any better.
I remember feeling like a kind of a surge of my head, and I didn't know what was wrong. 1, 2, 3, go. These fingers have actually loosened up a little bit, but mostly it's a very tense grip. So I'm just working on trying to like release my fingers to pick up. Almost a lot of times I just have to kind of move my hands around to grip things. I was angry because we worked so hard up to this point to finally get pregnant and be ready for the baby to come. I just missed a lot of her baby. I think that's very difficult for me. I just want that back.
So Allison had a stroke, as I already mentioned, and you hear her husband say, "We just didn't know any better." So even though they realized her blood pressure was high, they didn't push it. Is that something that you found with other women that you interviewed?
Yes, this issue of high blood pressure is just a very pervasive problem, especially because in many cases it occurs after the woman gives birth and she goes home in those initial days following childbirth. And there's so much attention around the baby, they're feeling overwhelmed sometimes and exhausted and they're not feeling well, and these blood pressures go up. And there are a couple of issues that experts say. I mean, one is education needed on the communication side, on the provider side of things. But also, the more that women can be aware that there are these really sort of dangerous high blood pressures, that this is something that, you know, if you can educate yourself or educate a loved one or a friend, that if you've got a blood pressure, especially one that is above 160 or 110, 160 over 110, or either of those numbers individually, if you're at that level, you need to really be sort of jumping up and down on a table and trying to get medical your medical expert's attention.
Now, Allison, we're going to take a call from Indira Lucero. Indira, are you there?
I am.
Indira, tell us what you do for a living. I understand you're an attorney.
Yes, my name is Indira Lucero, and I'm a staff attorney with National Advocates for Pregnant Women.
And so are many of your clients women who've experienced complications?
Well, we work, obviously, with pregnant folks, and we try to protect their human and civil rights. There's a wide range of ways that we do that, but I wanted to call in to sort of underscore something Allison said about how complex this area is, how hard it is to get a handle on things, and just note that in addition to the failures regarding emergency treatment and sort of handling the worst-case scenarios, what we know is that there are problems in the U.S. maternity care system across the board when it comes to getting evidence-based care and best practices to all folks who are pregnant and giving birth. I wanted to note in particular one of the cases that we're working on that is in New York. New York is one of the places that I know Allison was able to find a lot of data. And this case in New York had to do with Northwell's Staten Island University Hospital, where Renat Dre was actually forced to have a C-section. And part of the basis for that force was the use of the electronic fetal monitor, which is practically universally used, despite the fact that evidence tells us, and we know and have known since the late 1970s, that that particular tool does not improve outcomes, and in fact leads to a higher rate of cesarean surgery. And Northwell, as it turns out, is New York State's largest healthcare provider, and in many of their hospitals, their C-section rate is higher than 30%. We also know that when the C-section rate is over 15%, the risks of that procedure outweigh the benefits. So we know first that across the board in maternity care, what the best practices are not being integrated, just like Allison's learned with regard to emergency treatments. And when hospitals support policies that can even be used to force pregnant people into some of these procedures, it just underscores how dysfunctional the system really is.
Indra, thank you for your call. Allison, is any of what Indra has brought forward familiar to you?
Well, I mean, her larger issues are something that we've encountered over and over. And one of the challenges, I think, for women healthcare consumers is, number one, they may not have a choice as to what hospital they go to based on their insurance or who their provider is and where their provider delivers babies. But even if you do have a choice, one of the things that we found is that it's very difficult to find out what the track record is in terms of maternal and childbirth complications at an individual hospital. In some states, you can get some information about C-section rates, and that is a very important issue and something that women want to know about. But in terms of trying to get some data about how effectively they deal with severe high blood pressure conditions, do they give treatments within the one-hour standard and make sure that women are protected against stroke? Do they are they doing the kinds of measuring of blood loss so that women are more likely to get treatments for hemorrhage quickly? That kind of information is just not out there for women to find. And one of the things that I would really encourage those who care about this issue, whether you're a woman who is pregnant or considering being pregnant, or you're just simply a friend or a loved one, telling your stories publicly is one of the things that I think has huge impact. And USA Today is continuing its investigation, and we would love to hear from you if you have stories to tell. You can come to maternal.usatoday.com, which is our website, and we have a box where you can click, and you can tell us your stories and your concerns, and we want to hear all of them.
And we're back. I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm speaking with USA Today reporter Allison Young about her investigation, Deadly Deliveries. Hospitals know how to protect moms. They just aren't doing it. So before we went on break, Allison, we were talking about how difficult it is to get information from hospitals. You also talk in your story about how voluntary improvements, leaving it up to hospitals to make these changes voluntarily doesn't work. And regulators and oversight groups that could mandate these requirements don't. Dr. David Baker from the Joint Commission, a private accreditation group that sets safety standards for thousands of hospitals, is quoted as saying, "For us to make a requirement for every organization to follow something, there has to be clear national consensus that this is the standard for care." Is there debate within medical experts over the best practices around high blood pressure or hemorrhaging?
So in these two areas, there are what are called safety bundles. So these are evidence-based practices and protocols that a large number of groups, basically every organization, professional organization from the obstetricians to the nurses and midwives and anesthesiologists, almost every professional society whose members care for pregnant women and deliver their babies are part of an organization called the Council on Patient Safety and Women's Healthcare. And the AIM program, which is part of this, has put forth these safety bundles based on the totality of the evidence. So these are not fringe groups. These are the standard bearers of the professional societies that are working in the area of obstetrics. And these groups say that there is the evidence that says every hospital that delivers babies should be doing these things.
Okay, and at least one state seems to be making changes. That's California. But before we go into that, let's take one other caller. Let's go to Ava. Ava, are you on the line?
I am here.
Great, Ava. Can you tell us your story?
Yes, absolutely. I had the perfect pregnancy. I swam every day. I did prenatal yoga. I was 150 pounds at delivery after I gained 30 pounds with my pregnancy. Went in to have the baby, which was going to be a vaginal delivery. This was my first birth. And the doctor said, let's speed this up a little bit. I'm just going to give you a C-section. And I looked at my husband, and I was terrified, and I said, should I be concerned? And the doctor said, no, if I have one patient hemorrhage on me every 5 years, but don't worry about that. Well, guess what? My odds, I was the patient that actually hemorrhaged. I was in the recovery room. I was not passing fluids. I don't really remember much, but my husband had gone home. My family had gone home. The nurse said, "You're not passing fluids. We believe you're hemorrhaging. Please sign this waiver saying if we cannot find the source of your bleeding that we're going to give you a hysterectomy."
Wow.
And my haze, I signed it. They wheeled me in. I spent 3 days in ICU. I had a blood transfusion. I had some hemoglobin platelet issues as well. It felt like the delivery from you know where.
Wow, that
I feel like it didn't have to be, you know, and I know there are a lot of things that were wrong. And the ironic thing is I met someone that actually used that same doctor that I had. The same thing happened to her with her first pregnancy. She got pregnant the second time. We opted not to have any other children after that. The second time, she said, if I'm going to have another baby, I'm going back home to Pakistan because this doesn't happen there. And that's where she went and had a great delivery in Pakistan.
Now, did I understand you correctly that you said you decided not to have any more children because of this experience?
We did. It was so traumatic. My husband, you know, we can't even think about kids. You know, I would like to have our son will be 8 in August. My husband said, no way. Seeing what I went through, having to think about possibly raising a child on my own, there's no way that I would want to see you go through that again.
Wow. Allison, how often do you hear stories like this? And how often are women pressured either into inductions or into C-sections?
So Ava's experience, I mean, she talks about how traumatic this was. A part of what we did in this series is we really wanted to give voice to women like her who have experienced just what was supposed to be the best day of their life and ended up just going tragically awful. You know, so we have a whole series of videos where women are talking about what it's like to be one of the 50,000 a year. And you can watch those videos at 50k.usatoday.com. And one of the things that's so striking is years later, even if the physical injuries have healed, and for many of these women they have not, even if those physical injuries have healed, there is tremendous just emotional harm. And it's not just to the women themselves, it's also to their families. This has extraordinarily lasting impact on women and on families. And, you know, as far as the issue on medical procedures, one of the things that is very difficult for women is, you know, when you're a patient and you're there in a very vulnerable situation, and you're being told you something needs to happen, it's incredibly difficult to advocate for yourself in that moment. And one of the things that many of the women told us is that they wished that they would have had somebody by their side who could be a stronger medical advocate, that they wish they had someone who had more information who could help speak and put forth their wishes. But it's also very difficult to do that, even if you've got someone by your side through these experiences.
Right, and you talk about long-lasting impact, and I think about one of the women that you mentioned who actually passed away. Her name was Yolanda Menchen, and you interview her husband, and it was a very emotional interview. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So Yolanda and her husband, Marco, were incredibly excited about, they were about to have their third daughter, a little girl that they decided in advance to name Serenity. They were both very spiritual people. And in Yolanda's case, she started experiencing these dangerously high blood pressures. And she had them even in the hospital before she was discharged after she gave birth. They were above this danger level. And she went home, and she started getting this excruciating headache, which is yet another warning sign of really impending disaster. Her husband races her back to her birthing hospital, to the emergency department. They take her blood pressure on intake, and it's even higher than it was. It is very much way beyond the danger zone. And yet she's left to sit in this hospital waiting room for hours. as her husband. I mean, and he tells this just, you know, just heart-wrenching story about his efforts to try to get the hospital emergency department staff to pay attention, to come help his wife as she's getting worse and worse as she's waiting. And they finally get back to an examination room, and his wife stops responding. And she ultimately had suffered a stroke, and she ended up dying.
Right, and now he's left to raise three girls, is that correct, by himself?
Yep, he is.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I'm speaking with USA Today reporter Allison Young about her investigation, Deadly Deliveries, Hospitals Know How to Protect Moms, They Just Aren't Doing It. Allison, we're going to go to a caller named Stephen. Stephen, are you there? I understand you're a doctor.
I am. Actually, I am a specialist, but I'm not an OBGYN. I'm a doctor in the Northwell system. So the last caller, the attorney who commented about the Staten Island event, you know, kind of hits home. But I want you to, but I guess my point being, and I was told to keep it brief, but
okay,
it's incredibly hard and to apply guidelines which are implemented, but have to be applied to a wide demographic range of patients and with a different culture amongst those patients. So when you talk about implementing guidelines, there is one way to do it when you have an homogenous culture, say in England or in Sweden, whereas compared to a place, take even Staten Island, where there are multiple cultures, multiple ranges. And in the European cultures, it is very common for pregnant women to go to the doctors routinely, whereas a lot of women feel like they're young, they're healthy, where do they have to go? Checkups maybe not as important. Now, granted, every single event that happens to a pregnant woman is a disaster by definition. It affects the mom, it affects the baby, it affects the parents, it affects everybody.
Now, Stephen,
Nobody wants to see these events occur, I guarantee it. I think what you're tapping into, unfortunately, is the collapse of medical care and the medical care infrastructure as people are more worried about charting and also more and still malpractice averse. So, you know, we live in a very litigious society still. So, of course, you know, everybody wants to think that they can do practice best medicine as best as they can. Nobody's trying to hurt nobody's trying to hurt pregnant women, I guarantee you that. But I do
feel
that.
Right, I think we could all agree with that. But let's get Allison to respond to some of what you're saying. Allison?
Sure. I mean, look, to be sure, I mean, and we talk with folks in the story, experts who really bring home this point, that doctors and nurses go into those professions because they want to save lives. But one of the things that's really difficult for them to encounter is that the way that I've been doing things for a very long time may not be the way that I should. And as a result, it may be that, in fact, the care has done harm to people. And that's one of the things that these safety experts say is really difficult for medical professionals to understand. And it's very true. We have a society where we are older when we're giving birth. We may be overweight. We may have other health conditions. But that's also the case in other countries. And there are problems with prenatal care for many women. But regardless of all of that, these interventions that we're writing about in USA Today are being applied at the hospital level. They're things that, yes, all of those other things upstream ought to be done. But these experts are saying that if these kinds of procedures were followed in the closed hospital environment, more women's lives would be saved.
Right, and I guess I would also add my colleague here, Fred Mogul, also did a whole series on maternal mortality, and he found in New York State, for instance, that when you control for things like poor prenatal care or other health conditions prior to pregnancy, that you still have, for instance, Black women have four times more complications than white women, even when those things are controlled for.
Yes, absolutely true.
Stephen, are you still there? Okay, I think Stephen is gone. So, Allison, You're asking people to tell their stories. The videos are very compelling. What is next? You said that this isn't over. So what is next?
So USA Today is still continuing to examine the role that medical care is playing at the hospital level. And so we're very much researching how well hospitals are and are not following these best practices. And so in addition to the kinds of reporting that we're doing where we're asking those questions, we want to hear from medical consumers about their experiences. We'd also like to hear, you know, we've asked the questions of so far 75 hospitals, whether they're following some of these best practices. Are you measuring blood loss? Do you have requirements that women get blood pressure medications within 1 hour if they're above the danger level? And half the hospitals wouldn't answer our questions. But we would love to hear from women about whether they're asking these kinds of questions of hospitals and whether or not they're able to get their own answers. So those are the kinds of things that we're working on going forward.
And Allison, you also talk about women feeling like they're not being heard. And you also mentioned having an advocate there who can advocate for you. What about the role of a doula? Did you look into doulas at all?
We did not look in specifically to any sort of advocates, but that obviously is a professional who can really be of service to women. I think it's, you know, everything from, you know, having a support system in place with friends and family or having a professional there by your side, all of those kinds of things can make a difference. And the other thing, too, is information is power. We have put together a really good tip sheet that you can download from our website on how to advocate for yourself, how to ensure that your hospital is measuring blood loss and the kinds of specific questions you can ask, how to ensure that your blood pressure readings are being taken appropriately, including a graphic. I mean, this is one of the most basic things that we all go through at a doctor's office, but often it's being taken wrong. That information is available at pregnancytips.usatoday.com.
Allison, thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Cindy Rodriguez, and I've been speaking with USA Today reporter Allison Young about her investigation, Deadly Deliveries. Hospitals know how to protect moms. They just aren't doing it.